Finland is the focus of our attention today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Peter Kivistö has been honored by Finland for his interest in that country's culture. He honors us with his presence today on Scribble.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine.
You are here because 2 weeks ago, your wife gave me a book after church by a Finnish writer named Tuomas Kiro called The Beggar and the Hare, which in reading it, not only was it a great story, but it says it's a retelling of an old Finnish folktale. And that got me to thinking that I haven't heard much literary-wise from Finland over the years. I mean, you know, Scandinavians, including Icelanders, are writing their tales off and getting published over here, particularly in the mystery area. But the only thing I know about Finnish literature is that back in the 19th century, when Henry Wadsworth Longfellow decided to do the story of Hiawatha, he was looking about for a rhythm that seemed to be Indian, and he hit upon a Finnish epic, and I don't even remember.
It's the Kalevala.
The Kalevala.
Kalevala, yes.
Okay,
that's right.
And that's what he used, so that all of us who had to memorize the first 20 lines of Hiawatha, by the shores of Gitche-Gumee, by the shining big sea waters, are really using a Finnish epic, has nothing to do with Native American beat. And yet today, too, if you look at a Western, right, the beat of Indian music is, in fact, Finnish.
Yeah. Well, but, there's also Sibelius, you know.
Well, there's Sibelius.
Yeah, and Saarinen. It's not that the Finns don't have culture, but why hasn't more Finnish literature come over here?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know the answer. There is one person who has made, I think, something of a splash in recent years. She was sort of the bad girl of contemporary Finnish literature. Her name is Sofi Oksanen. And she published a book, a novel called Purge, maybe about 10 years ago now, I suppose. But it was a really fine look at she's Estonian and Finnish. She lives in Helsinki. But it was looking at the collapse of Soviet communism from the perspective of somebody in Estonia. But there are these connections because Estonian and Finnish are similar languages. They're only, you know, a few miles apart in the Gulf of Finland. And so there was a kind of back and forth. But part of this story, which moves back and forth between the Stalinist purges and the collapse of communism in the late 80s, early 90s, and in fact, every chapter, you always keep checking the dates because she moved back and forth. But you see this painful history in Estonia, and Finland had its own painful history, but Finland ended up after World War II, or what they would call the Winter War and the Continuation War, ended up independent, the one country on the border of the Soviet Union that remained an independent Western country. Estonia was locked in the part of the Soviet Union for a long time.
When you talk about the three countries, Norway, Sweden, and Finland, is it proper to include Finland in the general term Scandinavian?
No.
I didn't think
no,
so.
No, no. Denmark and Norway and Sweden. And they have, you know, there's a linguistic similarity. But so the term that works is Nordic. Then you can toss in Iceland as well.
Yeah. Then it's Nordic detective fiction I have read.
It's Scandinavian, actually. Yeah, it's Scandinavian you've read because for some reason there is a genre of crime novels in Finland, but they haven't made it in English translation.
I thought I read one that was from Finland. It's, of course, my memory is so porous, I can't be sure, but you mentioned the traffic between Finland and Estonia.
Yeah.
That figures prominently in the book. But what do I know?
Is there a Finnish immigrant literature? There's Rolvag for Norway and Moberg for Sweden.
There is, but nothing like the epic stuff from the Norwegian. So
right.
there isn't something comparable. It's a minor literature.
Why would that be? I mean, there are plenty of Finns immigrated. Right?
Yes,
Northern Minnesota, Iron Range is full of them.
Yeah, 300,000. I'm not sure why, to tell you the truth. But it simply hasn't. It didn't happen. I think one of the more important novels. I was once in a restaurant in Helsinki, reading an English translation, but it's a three-volume epic called Under the North Star by someone named Veino Linna, and it traces the painful history of Finland from the 19th century to the end of World War II, or the Continuation War, looking at, in particular, at the conflict between the so-called Reds and Whites. There was a brutal civil war in Finland right in the wake of the Russian Revolution, and it was extraordinarily divisive. It led to a fascist movement in the late 20s, early 1930s called the Lapua Movement. And Veino Linna's novel takes this fictional town in sort of western central Finland, and you see three generations of this family who are leftists coming through. But there's also all sorts of other characters, including the parish priest and so on, who all of whom are except for the priest's wife, the one person you come away not liking at all. But everyone else, you have some sympathy for the humanity in all of these people struggling with this unbelievably divided world. And it's been said that Linna's novel, which is really widely read in Finland, but in the 1950s was instrumental in helping to unify the country. And it's a wonderful novel, too.
And you also have a native population, name escapes me.
Sami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up in the north, mm-hmm. particularly with the reindeer culture and so on.
Right.
Is that different from those in the southern end of Finland? I mean, are the two different?
Well, the Sami
tribes?
are the indigenous people, and they straddle Sweden, Norway, and into Russia, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So Finland, and this is once upon a time they were called Laplanders.
That's what I grew up with.
Okay. Which is now not a fashionable term
right.
to use. So the Sami. And that's the term, and there is this, they're historically, because they were sort of nomadic, there was a lot of movement back and forth across the borders. Of course, that's not the case.
Where did they originate?
There's a lot of speculation about where Finns in general, including the Sami,
right.
came from. I think the general consensus among anthropologists is that somewhere in Central Asia. So there is this image of Finns. When Finns came to the United States, they were the only European origin group for whom there was a legal case made that was where they were going to be denied citizenship rights because we had anti-Asian legislation on the books from 1882. And the argument was made – this was in Minnesota, in a Minnesota court case in 1907, I think it was, that Finns who were applying for – there were 17 Finns. They were all socialists, and it was a politically motivated a trial ultimately. But they were denied their first citizenship papers on the grounds that they were the term used was Mongolian.
Mm-hmm.
That was overturned by a couple weeks later by an appeals court judge who argued that once upon a time the Finns were in fact Mongolian, but they had mixed so thoroughly with – Swedes, I suppose, with whites, that mm-hmm. they were now white.
Uh-huh.
So there's just been this sensitivity. And interestingly enough, because you'd mentioned the issue of Native American or Indian, there's also this image of Finns and having a kind of connection to Indians, Native Americans. And there's a wonderful novel a couple of novels by the late Jim Harrison, who was not a Finn, not from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where I grew up, but he owned a cabin there, and he spent a lot of time there. And he seemed to know every little trout stream and in the entire Upper Peninsula. But he wrote a novel called Returning to Earth about a guy who's half Finnish, half – and it was contemporary novel, you know, half Finnish, half Chippewa. And he sees these things as this identity as being terribly interconnected. And he's also this working class guy who married the lumber baron's daughter.
Oh, my.
So there's this wonderful kind of dynamic there, too.
You have enough of a conflict there.
Right. But this issue of the relationship between Native Americans and Finns has been it's also rooted in that Asian – that notion of the Asian connection, too.
Well, where did the language come from? You know, when I took linguistics in grad school, one of the things I learned is that Finnish is a member of a very small group of languages,
right.
Essentially Finno-Ugrian, right? Hungarian.
Right.
And Finnish.
And Estonian. Yeah, that's right. And
where
it comes from, I don't know. I am not sure where it comes from. But what I do know is that, yes, there is this historic connection with Hungarian, but Hungarians and Finns can't understand each other now. The languages have diverged. But just as I understand Norwegians and Swedes and Danes can understand one another, that's at least at some level, the languages are similar enough. Similarly with Estonian and Finnish.
Right.
There's an ability to understand.
What fascinates me when you look at the movement of peoples and how things have changed, it was from the Vikings, or at least from the Nordic area, that came down and populated Russia.
Yeah.
And that Russia, you know, you look for a Viking culture, look at Russia. There's a big infusion of that, as well as Mongolia and so on. The way people have moved around in the world, and, you know, I don't know why we try to draw these sharp distinctions between whites and blacks, browns, yellows, or we build walls around ourselves and we take some superficial characteristic, and that is going to divide us. The United States was put together with the thought that nothing will divide us. But boy, that's being tested.
Yes, it is.
It's being tested all over the world, constantly.
Yeah.
People fall back on this instinctual behavior rather than what they can reason ought to be.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, you teach anthropology?
Sociology.
Sociology,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you had a touch of anthropology in that.
I'm in a department with anthropologists, so I hang around with anthropologists.
I see. Well, watch, they're a fast crowd.
Yeah.
To what extent, if at all, is Finnish culture influenced by its neighbor, Russia?
Very much so. I mean, you know, I heard some on – I was listening to the news – recently, within the last week or so, and I heard someone bring up a term I hadn't heard in a long time, which was Finlandization, which was a term that was used during the post-World War II era to describe how the Finns negotiated living next to this neighbor.
Right.
And oftentimes it was used in a kind of pejorative way. It suggests that somehow they capitulated to the Soviets. The way the Finns see it, the way I certainly see it, is they were being realists. They have to deal with the fact that they have this giant neighbor next to them. And during Soviet times, they actually worked this system fairly well. They were a Western country. They were a multi-party parliamentary democracy, and they had all kinds of trade relations with the West. But they also had trade agreements with the Warsaw Pact countries. And actually for Finland, that worked to their advantage, because when you had recessions in the West, they increased trade in the East. They somehow learned how to deal with the Soviets. You know, for example, how did you deal with the currency exchange, with the Finnish currency and the ruble, which was, a suspicious currency. And one of the things that they did is they developed a fairly elaborate what amounted to sort of a barter system. But they've learned to deal with Russians and the connection. I mean, right now in Finland has begun since the late 90s to be an immigrant receiving country, the first time in its history. And while there's oftentimes talk about and the anti-immigrant forces tend to focus on Kurds or other Iraqis or Somalians, whose numbers are very small. In fact, the two large groups are Russians and Estonians, and they fit in physically, but not linguistically, and so on. There is prejudice against Russians. You'll hear complaints about organized crime and things like that. But they also understand that this is the reality. So, for example, I spend a lot of time at the University of Turku, and I've spent a lot of time in the guest house there. And there, I don't know how many rooms there are. Maybe 30 people at a time are in this building. Wednesday night is sauna night, free sauna night. Okay, so I would always go down there, and I would tell my friends at the university. I said, I'm going to do the census count at the guest house today to see how many Russians are there, because they would always be there for sauna, and oftentimes the majority of the people there were Russian or Ukrainian, and that suggests that there's this ongoing mutual contact in a lot of different ways, including academic circles.
Speaking of academics, we read a lot about the educational system in Finland.
Yeah, oh yes.
That's supposed to be kind of a model for the world.
Yeah. They have ranked very high in this ranking called PISA, number one for a long time. Now, there are a couple of countries that, at least to my mind, probably have gamed the system, or at least at the very least their educational systems are a little bit different. One, South Korea does well these days, but also there are some – it's not countries so much as it's cities, like Shanghai claims to do well. But the Finns consistently fare very well. And one explanation – well, there's a couple. But one thing that makes it possible is that it's a society that values egalitarianism. The levels of inequality are not as pronounced as they are in other liberal democracies, and that helps considerably. So you don't have this you don't have this huge gulf between the richest and the poorest. They also value public education. It's competitive. To get into teacher education programs in the universities is highly competitive. The pay is good but not spectacular, but there's still considerable status attached to being a teacher. People are proud to be teachers. And so they have a lot going for them in this regard. And they are, quite understandably proud of the fact that they do well. An added dimension they oftentimes tell me is that they do better than the Swedes, and that – That's just an added icing on the cake.
Let's not let that rumor go any further, shall we? I want to get us in trouble.
Did you grow up in a household that made much of its Swedish – of its Finnish roots?
No, because my mother was Cornish.
Okay.
But that was actually sort of the interesting divide. See, I grew up in the 50s and 60s.
Right. Okay.
And so you still had a fair number of people who were – Finns marrying Finns and so on.
Right.
And for example, I had a high school girlfriend whose parents were both they were second generation. She spoke Finnish in high school. She spoke Finnish. Now, I didn't, because we didn't speak it in the house. And my grandparents would usually speak Finnish in order to not let the grandchildren know what they're talking about. in other words, they weren't instructing us in Finnish. They were using Finnish as a private code for them.
So you didn't grow up with Finnish folktales? And
No. I will say this. We had I think we probably had more copies of the Kalevala at our house than we had Bibles. But they seem to be unread. I don't think my father ever read the Kalevala.
That is a famous and powerful epic.
Oh yes, it is.
And Sibelius is the one who really pushed it out into the world.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's great music too.
I mean, it was created in the 19th century. You were talking about Longfellow. I mean, it was not something that's ancient.
You know?
It was pieced together. Presumably, these ancient stories and things were gathered up, but in fact it was created by a person who was by origin at least a Swedish speaking Finn. The elites in Finland in the 19th century into the 20th century were Swedish speaking. And so when they tried to make a connection, when nationalism took hold and they tried to make a connection with the people, they had a linguistic problem.
Yeah. Well, it was extremely popular in the United States among literary circles.
Uh-huh.
And I'm assume other people too.
Yeah, it's it is really amazing when you look at the diversity in the world. You think, why is this a source of division? I mean, there's so much interesting in other places and other peoples. Why don't we just glory in that? Because it's the richness of human existence on this globe is just astounding. And,
I think this is one of the big divides in the world today, certainly in our country, but I think everywhere at the moment. And that's between people who are sort of what I'm going to say instinctually, that's probably not the word, but who are just have a willingness to be inclusive versus people who are exclusive.
Right.
You know, that's I think one of the biggest polarizing divides in certainly in our society. People who are, for example, comfortable with immigrants, newcomers, you know, living with them, living in their midst, versus people who want to put some distance between them. And one of the curious things is actually that people who tend to be most exclusionary are the people who are usually living in places where there are the fewest different people around. So they're not even experiencing it. They're not experiencing problems because you're bumping into these people in some.
Oh yeah.
Racism
tends to be intense. Not only in the South, but in those states where they're mostly white. It's an amazing world. And we want to thank you for bringing one corner of it to us today.
Well, you're welcome.
Get back to Finland often?
I'll be there in April. I'll be teaching a course there on immigration, as a matter of fact, at the University of Helsinki.
Okay. Peter Kivisto, well, have a fun time in Finland, and watch out for flying reindeer. That was an interesting excursion we had into Finland. That's a country we know very little about.
It turns out, until I got this book from Peter, I hadn't even thought much about Finnish literature. And it's one of the few countries, about which we have almost no literature, at least that I was aware. It turns out there's a little more, but not much.
My daughter Terry is married to a veterinarian who specialized in racehorses. And my acquaintance with Finland is a Finnish owner of horses. He had quite a stable of horses. And it just so happens that Jim was one of the very best horse vets in Florida. And so this man had Jim and Terry fly out to Finland. Jim went all over Finland tending this man's horses while Terry developed Shopper's Elbow in Helsinki. But that's as close as I've come. Apparently, this fellow not only had horses, he had a lot of horses and really good ones, and he wanted them well tended. So, it's amazing. You run into different nationalities all over. And one of the fascinating things about being in London was when I'd walk down a street, I'd hear every language on the surface of the earth. What an amazing place. But what is the book that...
I'm going to go back to the book that we talked about when in talking to Peter, the book that, in fact, got Peter here that he gave me a couple weeks ago. It's a book called The Beggar and the Hare, H-A-R-E, rabbit, in other words, by a young Finnish writer named Tuomas Kyrö, T-U-O-M-A-S-K-Y-R-O, umlaut O. It is a retelling, apparently, of an old Finnish folktale. But in this one, it's a modern-day poor Romanian who has no job and no prospects in Romania, who is gathered up by the Russian mafia and under a fearless leader of the mafia is taken to Finland to beg, one of the many jobs that the Russian mafia is making money from in Finland. He is forced to give the mafia something like 80% of his beggings, and he gets 20%, which barely keeps him alive. In the course of going throughout Finland, begging from place to place, he comes across a wounded rabbit, and he gives the rabbit a splint and decides to keep the rabbit safe, feed the rabbit. And together, this young Romanian and his wounded rabbit embark on a series of journeys in getting away from the Russians. He falls into an incredible series of events. He becomes a magician's assistant. He learns how to take a sauna from a friendly Finnish family. And as he goes from job to job, he rises in ranks. Improbable things happen to him. He becomes semi-wealthy. He becomes famous. And he and the rabbit get along perfectly well as they ramble throughout Finland. It reads a lot if you're familiar with a book that we recommended here a couple of years ago, the book called A 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out the Window and Disappeared, which is also an improbable story of a series of adventures. This would be like the, I suppose, the Scandinavian sagas, only it's done tongue-in-cheek, and it is really a delightful book to read. Won't take you long to read, but if you want a fun read just to get away from all the problems that people have today, that would be a good one to think about. And it will start your interest in Finland.
The Beggar and the Hare.
The Beggar and the Hare by Tuomas Kiro.
You know, the fantastic literature, that is kind of a genre all of its own, isn't it? It's you well, occasionally run into these picaresque things.
Every culture, right? Sinbad the Sailor, yeah. 1001 Nights.
Yeah, and I often wonder what it takes to come up with things like that, to have a fantastic imagination, and yet to tell the story in such a way that you carry the reader with you, who willingly follows on this highly improbable course of events.
Well, and I think in this book, too, you do get a fairly interesting idea of contemporary Finnish culture and what's going on in Finland.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a travelogue as well.
Well,
it's a
weird travelogue, it is.
Uh-huh. Well, it's how do you spell the author's last name?
Tuomas. I suppose it's Thomas, we would say. T-U-O-M-A-S, and then Kiro. K-Y-R-O, umlaut O.
Okay. Well, Peter gave us not only a nice survey of what's going on in Finland, but he got us a book to read.
Yes.
And that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll look for you next week on the next edition of Scribble. We'll be right back.